Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe. Make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, Guru Nation. Welcome to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This is going on the podcast. I don't know what episode it is because, well, actually, it might be 251, actually. So episode 251, I think, of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Also going to go on YouTube, also on Facebook, also a little highlight reel on LinkedIn. They only allow 10-minute videos, so that's what you'll get. I've got ECRG. I love the way you say, can I get your intro? Can you say it here? Say, hey guys.
Hey guys, ECRG here, back with another episode. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
I love that, man. You don't know how catchy that is.
Oh, you like that?
I do like that. Have you gotten any flack from the feminists or liberals for not including gals?
No. I actually, you know, Chris Jones, he's in the fitness industry. He does something similar to that. So that's where I kind of got that from. But
okay, that's cool.
I like it. It's simple. We get in there and we get out.
You got a good voice for the podcast. You just interviewed me on your channel, which I'm very grateful for.
Appreciate it.
To push my new book coming out. And you've got a huge channel. You grew your channel like really fast, man. Let's talk about that. Do you know how long it took me to get to – wait, how many subscribers do you have?
I think like 730 or something around there.
Do you know it took me like 3 years to get that? Freaking years.
Well, Dan, I'm benefiting from all your hard work.
There you go.
All the people to the platform.
You're smart.
You did all the hard work. I'm just benefiting from it.
I guess they're just like exploding now, the numbers. And you've got a podcast too, right?
Yeah, the podcast is actually bigger than the YouTube channel,
That's what I was going to say, man.
And that grows a lot faster, which is crazy. I couldn't believe it because I started that way after the YouTube channel. And YouTube, I kind of had a lot more familiarity with YouTube before because I have other channels too. So I knew I could grow the YouTube channel, but the podcast thing was new for me.
Yeah. So, do you follow Pat Flynn, the guy, Pat Flynn, the podcasting guy?
He does punting. He was a former punter, him?
No, Pat Flynn. He was like an architect. He does Smart Passive Income.
No, I don't follow him.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, he's big into podcasts, and he just put an email blast out yesterday. He has a Podcaster Academy, which I'm not in, but I'm on his email list. So he said that there are like – I don't want to butcher the numbers. There's only like a million podcasts in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's like 500 million YouTube channels.
Huh.
And that number is expected to catch up to YouTube by 2023.
Interesting.
So if you're starting anything right now, it should be podcast focused.
Right. Well, I know that like they used to say on the YouTube days, like every day that passes, it's a lot harder to start.
Yes.
You want to start immediately if possible.
You got in super early on the podcast. It's still early for the podcast, man.
Yeah, it's still early.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I love it because it seems like they promote organically on the podcast somehow, because I don't know how it's growing. but it keeps growing, and I'm sure you're seeing this too.
It's going to keep growing, man.
The organic competition is great in the podcast world,
and it'll keep growing because like the listeners are catching up. Like they're starting to get into podcasts instead of YouTubes,
right?
So, congrats on your success, man. I think you've done a really good job. I think you're actually, I told you this on your podcast earlier, you're an example for all the employees out there. Like, this is a highly guarded, secretive industry, which we're going to kind of talk about a little bit in this interview. And you're proving to everybody that, hey, it doesn't matter. You can start your own brand. Look at
That's
me,
true.
Like ECRG. I've been doing this for a year and a half. I've got a podcast, YouTube. Like, you know, people start to know you. People are, and you're going to be able to have a brand and monetize, maybe create a business streams later on down the road.
Absolutely.
And just complement what you're already doing with your career. And you're a young dude. I mean, that's very smart. And anyone out there should be doing or should be taking an example from you if they actually have ambitions. If not, you know, you don't have to. But
right, because some people really don't. So
no.
And that's fine. More out there for the rest of us.
So give everyone a background of your. I interviewed you like a long time ago, but I actually forgot your backstory as well. So just give us like a rundown of who you are, how you got started in clinical research, and what you're doing now.
Okay. Yeah, perfect. So I started in clinical research, I guess, about 3 years ago in 2016. Started out as a contractor making about $11 an hour. So started really from the bottom, pretty much as low as you can go in clinical
really?
Research world. Yeah.
When was this?
2016.
Okay.
I was working for a CRO, basically just doing TMF work. And, you know, uploading TMF documents, kind of QCing the documents and uploading them into the TMF. And did that for about 3 months, then got hired on by that same CRO full time. And from then on, I worked in that role. It was like a project manager assistant role. So did a lot of TMF, did a lot of meeting minutes, a lot of administrative work.
Meeting minutes?
Oh, yeah. Those are the worst.
Like what kind of meetings? Like between sites and the CROs or what kind of meetings?
No, it would be between like team meetings. So it'd be like the project manager, data management team. If there was like a TMF specialist or TMF lead person, they would join the meeting, and then the project team. So it'd be like the project director, project manager, that team. And then also we would do meetings with the sponsor. So we were also sponsor facing in that role too, which was cool because mm-hmm. You know, obviously those relations are pretty, you don't want to like say the wrong thing in front of the sponsor, or you want to be like as professional as possible. And those relationships are everything to the CRO because that's who's paying the bills and
wow.
keeping the light. So that was cool. So I did that for about a year and some change, year and 3 months or so. And then I always knew I wanted to be a CRA. So at that point, I got into a situation where I think it was going to be hard to transition from that role into being a CRA, just because a lot of things were going on with the company at that time, you know, mergers and then like, you know, hiring freezes and all a bunch of stuff was going on. So I decided to go on to an in-house CRA position at that point, which is site-facing. You're not facing the sponsor at all in that position, but it's a really good stepping stone, and I talk about this a lot on the channel. It's one of the great stepping stones to being a CRA because you are talking with the sites, you're interacting with the sites often. You're doing the stuff that the CRA doesn't necessarily want to focus on remotely, but you're able to handle that in that role. So those are going to be things like uploading documents that the CRA might have. They're going to be contacting the site, making sure that they're doing their action items. You know, even resolving queries in whatever query software, whatever ECRF there is. Remotely, so that when the CRA goes on site, they don't have a lot of queries to resolve, and they can just focus on SDVing the data and doing SDR when necessary. So that's a great role. I did that for about 10 months. And then eventually a CRA position opened up at another company, and I was able to, I got lucky enough and was very fortunate enough to be hired into that position. And so now
wow.
been a CRA for going on 8 months now.
Was that the only place you applied for CRA positions?
Oh, absolutely not. I applied countless other places. But it's very, very hard to break in as an entry-level CRA. It is infinitely hard. It is so hard. It was almost like applying with no experience again, because they only want people with CRA experience. But I think it made it a little easier that I did have that in-house CRA experience, but not by much.
Really? Not by much, you think?
Not by much. Because when they say they want CRA experience, what they really mean is they want on-site CRA experience. So there's a technique I do, and we do this in the resume review program that I have too, which is you kind of got to translate your experience and the experience you do have into more pertinent clinical research experience. So for example, so as an in-house CRA, you may be given the opportunity to go on-site and shadow. So that automatically turns into on-site experience when we do your resume for things like that. So you've kind of got to talk about the experience you do have. And then, of course, if you do that a number of times, because believe it or not, when you're a CRA, you only do like one or two C1 visits before you're doing it yourself anyway. So if you've gone on site a number of times, then you can say that you have that on-site experience at that point.
So you – okay, yeah, because I try to give my students the same advice. I mean, we have them come here to kickstart their internship from the CRA Academy. And then what I tell them is, hey, you know, like if I have a CRO thing – and we go to a site in LA to do SIV, you come with us. Or if you go back to Atlanta or Chicago or Baltimore, wherever you're from, we have a site there, and we actually need you to do some SDV, SDR when you go there. So we're trying to give them some of that too, some of that on-site, hands-on experience, including writing the reports too. So I think that more of those kind of things you do, the easier that will be to communicate in the interview, when you have an interview.
Of course.
Let's see. So, okay, you went from project manager assistant, where you had all like sponsor facing or internal interactions.
Yes.
And then you went to in-house CRA, where it was all site facing.
Yeah. So the project manager assistant role was kind of like a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. So if they needed you to be site-facing, you could end up doing a couple roles like that, especially in the beginning stages when the team was just getting built out. Mm-hmm. Like they may not have a data management person yet. They may not even have CRAs on the study yet. So you would do some of those tasks. So it was really more like a jack-of-all-trades. But once you moved over to clinical, into the in-house position, in-house CRA position, you were pretty much just doing clinical, just doing site-facing things. You wouldn't really interact with the project team that much, other than like a weekly meeting.
Interesting.
But as far as those type of tasks, you wouldn't be doing that. All I would be doing was like reviewing data and issuing queries in EDC, uploading documents to TMF, and we did like monitoring calls. So we'd like call the sites monthly to like ask them about different things like enrollment.
Oh, that would be you calling the sites.
Yeah. Yeah, not the CRA.
Yeah, we get those calls all the time here at the clinic I'm at.
So different CROs do different things, but I do think sponsors do like that as a selling point. You know, it's
did
more
you ever do a booster call, like call a site that's not enrolling and say, hey, you know, what's going on?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
You always get the same answers?
I don't really remember. That was a while ago, but
Recruitment is so hard, man. I was just talking to my coordinator earlier today about that.
It is hard. I think now that I'm an on-site CRA, I get to like actually talk to the site way more than just on the phone for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand the different logistics and things, because on those monitoring calls, I wouldn't talk to the PI. So I would only be talking to the coordinators. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm on site, I have to talk to the PI.
you're in the CRA life. So how do you like being a CRA?
I love it. I love it.
And how often do you travel?
About 1 to 2 times a week.
Okay. Are you regional? Mostly in your area?
Yeah, I'm regional. I'm on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So you travel up and down the East Coast. Occasionally you might get sent out west or somewhere else or in the middle of America, but most of the time East Coast. But I mean, I work for a sponsor, so it's way different than working for a CRO. I know I've obviously known a lot of people that were CRAs at CROs, and I think part of the things that CROs do that burn out CRAs so much is they have them traveling multiple places within 1 week, and that kind of turnaround just does a number on you. You know, all those flights back to back to back, then not to mention all those reports you have to do after that, and all those action items and things you got to close up with the site. It's just too much. I think one visit, and make it a little bit longer visit, if possible, so you can do more stuff on site. But having less turnaround, like, and less time in the airport is definitely something that I think leads to increased CRA happiness, and one of the things that I really appreciate. So,
yeah, I think the CRO, we talk about this on the podcast all the time with Chris. I think the big CROs are in trouble, and they know this, and they're starting to get into the technology aspects of managing the trial, because the paradigm has always been, let's get our CRAs days on site as many as we can until they get stressed out, and because that's where we make our money.
Exactly.
And now they're shifting that, not because they want to, but because the sponsors are demanding more efficiency with the technology and risk-based monitoring. All that stuff is because of the sponsors, not because of the CROs.
Right. And I know a number of sponsors that are actually hiring their own CRAs now, like their own CRA teams, and not even dealing with the, you know, they'll only do CROs for certain things, but not necessarily monitoring anymore. Because I know a number of sponsors too. I mean, if you're only on site for a day, there's not much you can do in that day. If you've got to do ISF, you've got to review data. I mean, you can't, this stuff takes time to do.
IP and accountability.
IP accountability, send drug back, you know, talk to the pharmacy. Sometimes these pharmacies aren't exactly right next to the site too, so you've got to go over there. Talk to the PI. It's too much to do in one day. And so, I mean, doing that so often just isn't, just doesn't work that well, I think.
Do you think remote monitoring is going to, first of all, are you guys using risk-based monitoring, or are you doing still traditional monitoring?
Currently, no, but at my at the place I worked before, they did do some risk-based monitoring. They were just starting to kind of dabble with it.
And how did that, what did you notice about that?
It was very early, so I can't really say much about it. I do think there's obviously a place for it. Because certain data points are just more valuable than others.
Yep.
Especially depending on which trial you're working on. And then to be able to kind of see, you know, which data points in the future are going to be problematic for sites. And then you can kind of like defend against that earlier on. So it's not problematic. I mean, obviously it's going to be beneficial.
I think CRAs were always doing risk-based monitoring. It was just their own algorithms. Like they would go to the site and say, I remember last time I was here, they had an issue with this, so now I'm going to look at their other subjects and see if they had the same issues. Right. And they're really good with this, so I can like leave that till the end, or maybe not even look at it at all, because they're, each time I look at it, there's nothing wrong with that particular issue. So there's always been risk-based monitoring. I think it's now just like trying to be more formal about it.
Right.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you need a lot of analytics for that, and having a different monitoring plan for every site can be a little confusing to CRAs. So I don't know how this is all going to work out, but we're all, I mean, what a time to be alive, ECRG.
What a time to be alive, exactly.
That's awesome. So sponsor versus CRO. Sponsor, much better. Work-life balance, I'm assuming.
Oh, it's not even close.
Not even close. Because what do you mean by that? Close.
Well, first of all, the sponsor is the one with all the money. So you definitely see that from your investigator meetings, from your per diems, from just the overall lax attitude on things like that. Deadlines, there's not the turnaround on things isn't as stressful. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You just see it filter throughout the entire like process. Like everything is better.
That's what I hear too from the CRAs I've been meeting on, you know, throughout the years, It's,
I think
it
even
always,
pay is better. Sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, no, I think pay is better. I think they're just happier, and there's all. We're not going to name names, but there's always the same CROs you hear that get a bad rep, and the same ones. Because look, there's some mega CROs that actually have a good reputation amongst their employees,
right.
But it's always the same names. Like you just hear it, and each time a monitor comes in. From the company, you know, just based on what company they're from, I know like what their stress levels and satisfaction levels should be. Their assumptions, of course. And then as I get to know them, I ask them and I poke and I prod and I see, okay, this one actually fits the mold. This one rolls her eyes at me when I mention her employer. you know, so you kind of anecdotally get to scope out who's the good CROs to work for and which ones are just the stepping stone and nothing more than that.
Right. Right. I mean, good thing for CRAs, there are a lot of CROs and companies out there. So, you know, CRAs have a reputation of jumping around a lot. And I think when you're just being beaten, run into the ground like that at a CRO, why not jump, take that 2 to 3 month vacation of just reading SOPs and then, you know, go make your money again for another six months to a year, then jump again. Why wouldn't you do that?
So I got a question. So let's get kind of technical here.
Okay.
I'm a contract CRA, so I dabble a little in monitoring, just a little. And then for my own CRO, we're starting to do more of that. I always get these questions from people, and I want to get another person's opinion on this. Is there a certain order, let's say interim monitoring visit, okay? Is there a certain order that you follow, or is it different for each site? Is it the same for each site, or do you just follow the report, like the order of the report?
Oh, okay. So the order of operations for me is, and this is how I was taught, so I don't know if this is like 100% right, and it probably depends per study.
That's the thing. I don't think there is a right, unless they're CRO or sponsor SOPs, but I mean, I don't think there is a right or wrong. That's why this is interesting to, you know, to get different people's opinions on.
Right. So I was taught patient data and reviewing data is priority number one. So that is what you must do. So if there's a lot of data to review, that's what you focus on. I mean, I've had days on site where I don't even look at the ISF binder. I don't collect any documents that day, and that's fine.
Even if there's updates.
Like, I literally won't even open it other than to sign the site visit log. That's it.
Okay.
So I've had days like that, and that's just fine with my employer. That's fine with them.
Yeah.
That may not be fine with anyone else's employer out there.
Yeah.
But once again, that's one of the benefits, I think, of working for a sponsor, not a CRO, because they may say, you've got to review that ISF.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're paying us to do that or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's always first. Then, and of course, you're only reviewing patient data if they have patients. If they don't have patients, then obviously there's no data to review. And then you'll just do like ISF binder and pharmacy and talk to the PI. But as far as order, patient data is always number one. Second thing I would say is probably going to be looking at the drug, making sure none of it's expired, things of that nature. I mean, if you have the time, you definitely want to go to the pharmacy. And, you know, usually sites are low on space. So returning any expired things, any expired devices or drug or lab kits, if you have to send those back, is going to be a second thing. And then talking to the PI usually is a priority too, but a lot of times PIs can't meet with you face to face, so you have to do a phone call with them.
Let's dive into that aspect. How many sites do you monitor, just approximately?
About 10.
Okay.
To 12.
And how many studies do you monitor, just one?
Two.
Okay. So from those...
But primarily one.
So from those dozen sites, okay, can you tell, as a monitor now, which of those sites have an actively involved PI and which ones don't?
Oh, easily.
okay, this is where it's going to get interesting. What percentage of them have an actively engaged PI? Let's start with that. What percentage?
Actively, I mean, there's different levels to active, but it's definitely on the rarer side. So maybe I'll say like 10%.
Wow, that's exactly what Chris and I play around with. I mean, we have these talks all the time, and we think it's 10% as well. Okay, interesting.
But it's always refreshing when you get one, because they'll sit down and talk to you for like, because normally the PI conversations, they just want you to give them their spiel, and then you get out of their face.
Yeah, you're lucky if you get 5 minutes, right?
You're lucky if you get 5 minutes. Most of them are less than 5 minutes.
I know.
But most of them, they just sit there and be like, okay, okay, okay. And then, you know, you're like, okay, that's it. And then they go on about their business. But the actively engaged ones will sit there. They'll talk to you. They'll ask questions, you know, things like that. And you can easily tell just by talking to them if they're actively engaged or not.
And do you think it makes a difference if the PI is the owner of the site or an employee, or you think it's just the same percentage regardless of their situation?
I don't know, because I don't think I have monitored at any sites yet that are that small.
Oh, okay. So
where the PI would own?
Yeah,
I've been at bigger sites, so I wouldn't be able to answer that yet. But I would think that the owner might. I don't know. It's hard to say, because they probably might be busier because they have to do other tasks than just be the PI. But I would think they'd be more engaged, but I don't know.
Yeah, in my experiences, you would think they were more engaged, but from my experiences, it doesn't matter if they're owner or not. So I was just wondering what your experiences were with that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so 10%. We agreed on that without talking about it beforehand. Okay.
Right.
What percentage are horrible? Like, they have no oversight, no safety oversight. Let's start with that.
It's probably a low, like that bad. Probably like about 15-10%, I'd say.
Again?
And then I'd put the rest in the middle. Right.
We're there too. 10 on the top, 10 on the bottom, 80 in the middle. And right. Then that middle is like a wide range, and people can switch. Like, you know, they can start acting better, and then or the good ones start slacking a little. Like, it's not just like you're stuck there, but that seems to be what I've noticed, not just as a CRA, but like as a consultant for sites. I wonder why that is. And then, what percentage do you think like commit fraud?
Huh. I guess committing the fraud is one thing, but catching it is a different story.
Yeah.
Because it can be hard to catch.
It is very hard to catch when you're busy with data. I've never monitored a site with fraud. I don't think it's that high. I mean, I'm talking about just like making up data points. Like, you know.
I've heard that. I've heard that's happened before. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it'd be hard to catch, but that's
a lot of that in Florida. Florida.
I've heard the worst sites are in Florida,
mm-hmm.
actually. But I think data management helps out a lot with that, because they're able to. When you monitor, you're only looking at a segment in time. You're only looking at a particular week, and then you review that data and you verify it. But you don't really go back and look at it again. But data management can look at like a big overarching, like multiple weeks at a time, and they can notice trends. Like they'll be able to sit there and be like, okay, you know, this number is the exact same every single week. That shouldn't be the same. Wow. That shouldn't be the thing.
Yeah, like so having 120/80 blood pressure every single time.
Every single time, right. Yeah. But as a monitor, you're monitoring every week at other sites. You may not notice that unless you just happen to go back and glance at that page.
Yeah, interesting. Data manager, good point. Good point for bringing that up. Interesting. Okay, and then at what percentage of these sites is the coordinator doing just about everything?
Over 90. Over 90.
So. Yeah, I agree with you there. It could even be higher. Even at the sites with the engaged PIs.
Yes. Because the PI just sign things. That's pretty much what they do. And it's the coordinator that's telling them what to sign. It's not even the PI, really.
Exactly.
It's the coordinator's job that brings the stuff to them.
The scary thing is the PIs don't even need to know the protocol, honestly. It's really the coordinators that are running the show.
Right.
And people don't know that. Well, I think people do know that, but there's nothing – what can you do other than replace sites and do virtual trials, which they're trying to do. But right. that's we're a ways away from that, I think. Interesting.
Yeah, I would say the PI's got to know inclusion exclusion criteria. Mm-hmm. But that's about it.
I think you're lucky if they know that in a lot of the cases.
Right, because they'll try to enroll, but then they'll get rejected yeah. by either medical monitor or something.
And then they'll ask the coordinator, CRA. Like, why was this patient not enrolled? And then they tell them, you know, exclusion criteria number 4. And then the PI is like, oh, I didn't know that. So
right.
I've seen that happen a lot, you know. But that's where you need a really good coordinator to catch those things. The worst recipe is where you have a PI that's not engaged and a coordinator doesn't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, that's potentially dangerous to the subjects as well. And now all the pressure's on the CRA to catch those things.
Right, right. And it can be hard sometimes. It could definitely be hard. But I think and that's probably one of the easier situations where you'd be able to tell. It'd just be kind of obvious.
Have you had any situations as a CRA? I know it's only been, what, eight months or
yeah.
8 months since you've been doing it. But where you had to tell your sponsor, hey, you know, this site, we should put them on a screening hold because XYZ.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had a site recently. Yeah, I had a site recently. They just weren't entering data. They weren't filling out source documents. Informed consents were all messed up. They were all wrong.
Wow.
Yeah, multiple informed – exactly. A lot of deviations.
Huh.
So at that point, if you can't enter the data from the patients you already have, there's no point in having more patients.
And what did this? What was the sponsor's reaction?
Well, I am the sponsor, so.
Well, oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, like your supervisor.
Oh. I mean, yeah, they agreed. I mean, it makes sense.
So they got your back. Because I've heard cases where CRAs do this, but you made a good point because you do work at the sponsor. But I've heard cases where CRAs do this and they're frustrated because the sponsor comes back to them with, well, try to encourage them next time. And it turns out that the reason they're doing this is because the PI is a key opinion leader.
Yes.
And they need them on the study. And yes. They need to keep them happy for whatever yes. reason, right?
Yes, you do see that a lot where the key opinion leader can get away with a lot more things than the other sites can mm-hmm. for whatever reason. I don't know why, but they definitely do get some preferential treatment in that regard.
Yeah.
So I've never done that. I've never monitored on their sites, but I know it can be a little bit more difficult mm-hmm. because they're a little bit more well connected with the company. I mean, they've been in the industry for a while usually. They've done a lot of research usually. And their word definitely holds a lot more weight than some of the other sites.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely seen it where, you know, you've got to be very careful how you deal with those sites.
Now, let's get out of the technical stuff as we wrap up. You still have time?
Oh, absolutely. I can go on for however long.
All right. That's cool. Okay. So hopefully we give value to people there about monitoring, coordinating. Let's get back to you. As an individual,
all right? Okay.
ECRG, what made you want to build your brand? It's, you know, I have calls. Let me give some context. So I have calls just about every day with people in the industry, whether they're coordinators, CRAs. You know, they've been working as employees forever, and they feel like they want something for themselves. Like, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, a lot of people have entrepreneurial tendencies and they want more than just to be an employee, even though the pay is very good in this industry.
Yeah.
They want more. And for those, because there's a percentage of the population that really are entrepreneurs and they should explore their ambitions realistically, but they should. What made you start thinking that way, like early on? Like, what, how did you even get, or were you just born with the entrepreneurial DNA?
No, I knew I wanted something more than what I was currently had at the time. But like I mentioned before, I had started, or maybe I didn't mention this, but I have started other YouTube channels in the past. So I had dabbled in the YouTube area. But when I started getting interested in clinical research, I saw it was you and only you who was doing it right. And of course, if you're familiar with the YouTube landscape, there's hundreds of channels in specific sectors. Like if you go look at fitness, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of YouTube channels that are all successful and probably making money in the fitness industry. Or if you look at music, how many different music channels there are. Or if you look at any of the other sectors, even like home gardening, there's a YouTube channel out there for anything nowadays. And I saw there was only one person. I was like, wow, this is an opportunity I've got to take because I'd have the skills to actually make a channel. I mean, I know how to edit videos and record a podcast, you know, all the things you need that go into a channel. I know how to make logos and all that stuff. So I feel like this was an opportunity I had to take. It would have been foolish of me not to if I saw it like this. Mm-hmm. So.
And a lot of people also, I think now, are seeing you and they're starting to do it themselves. You know what's interesting is I've seen people come and go, like without naming names, but there's been a few that have created videos, created content, and then they just disappear because there's, you know, what they'll learn is early on it's just extremely hard to get anyone to pay attention. And so they quit like right before things actually start getting good. Mm-hmm. What made you like push through?
Well, I knew, like I said, I built a YouTube channel before and it's actually like a lot bigger than this one. But so I knew to expect that. I knew that, you know, on that one, I uploaded maybe like 50 videos before I even had like 100 subscribers. So I knew that it was going to take a while. I knew it was going to take a long time. But I also knew that the value of a subscriber in this area, because the sector is so much smaller, was a lot more valuable than in some of the other areas. That's where great. There's a lot more people. Like, you don't need a lot of people to subscribe to your channel in the clinical research world. You just don't. You don't need that to develop an audience and provide real value for people. You just don't need a lot.
Where do you think there's still opportunity in this space for, you know, maybe someone sitting at home watching or listening and they're like, yeah, you know what ECRG is doing? I mean, I can do it, but I need my own lane. Like, where do you see that there's still room for content in our vertical?
Well, I don't think there has to be something that's necessarily way different than what we are currently doing, but I kind of looked at it like this. Like, your main focus is on the sites, and like at the site level, at least that's what it was like earlier on. Mm-hmm. And my main focus and my expertise was kind of at the CRO level when I was first making these videos and getting started, because I was in that project manager assistant when I recorded my first video. And I had actually recorded for maybe like 8 months a video every single day, but I just kept them on my hard drive. And then I slowly like been releasing them throughout ever since I started uploading. I think it's almost a year coming up soon. But that's kind of how I looked at it. So I guess someone from like the sponsor level, or you know, other vendors like Almac, or like a IWRS system vendors. Like there's lanes for everybody. But even if someone was coming on and doing exactly what we do, talking about the sites from the site level, there's room for that too. It's a big blue ocean out there on YouTube, and you know, there's room for everybody. That's what's so great about it. Just because someone subscribes to you doesn't mean they can't subscribe to me too, sure. or someone else. Mm-hmm. So there's room for everybody.
There's room for everyone that wants to do something, and everyone has their own, I guess, affinity towards something of particular interest. Like, I'm a business person, so my stuff's geared towards how to improve yourself as an entrepreneur, how to grow your career, how to grow your site. Yours is, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but from what I've seen, like helping people get into positions in
the
industry.
That's exactly right.
Right? Like, everyone will have their own passions. Kobe, who you're going to meet one day, you know, he does a day in the life of a coordinator, like a brand new coordinator at that. He talks about his mistakes, you know, what he learned that day, every day. Like, when you're at the stage he's in right now, Mm-hmm. Every day is something new. Literally every day is something new you learned. And that's something you can share with the audience. So
exactly.
I think there's so much opportunity for anyone that wants it. And how has your business grown? Like your own, you know, outside of monitoring, but like your own consulting, helping people get in, like have you been happy with the progress?
Oh, absolutely. It's been fantastic. A while ago I released the resume review program where I help people like with their resumes.
Smart.
And that's been pretty successful. I've got a lot of people, and so if you're interested, you can email me eliteclinicalgroup@gmail.com. So I've got a lot of people that have sent in testimonials about how I've helped them and stuff. Because I think part of the thing about not showing my face is you might lose a little bit of trustworthiness. So I do have testimonials in there. But also, you see, I've got maybe like 150 videos on the channel too. So you know I'm dedicated. You know that I'm here.
Consistency. That's what's
sure.
impressed me about you, because I've seen people come and go, and it's like, okay, that's what I expected with you. Just keeps at it, and they get good too. Like they're, you know, I mean, some of them are interesting. I don't watch many of them, but I see them when they come up, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool topic, like the one you did on India,
yeah,
or the one where you were mad about something. Like I, you know, I'll follow up with that. Have you gotten any haters yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. They're coming,
the
man.
Channel I have, but no, not
okay. You've had them on the other channel, so you know they come in waves. They come like, and I feel like it's the same people that, like, they'll be loud for a period of time and then they'll just be quiet.
Right.
And so I was gonna ask you how you deal with the haters, but well, from your other channel, like, what do? Just block them?
No, I'm just happy that they're commenting, because every time they comment, it increases my video in the algorithm. So
yeah.
I'm just happy. I even engage with them sometimes.
I engage with them too, and this, but I have blocked quite a few. So
oh, yeah?
I'll block people that spam. I'll block people that post comments where they're just links to, you know, whatever. Like, I'll block that. But when people disagree, and they don't really do this on my YouTube channel, they do this on LinkedIn, I've noticed. Like, LinkedIn is, it's turning into, I mean, it's a powerful platform, but it's turning
yes.
into, like, Facebook 2.0, I guess, for our industry. The biggest haters I've gotten on LinkedIn, and I engage with them there. I'm like, hey, you know, you disagree, that's fine. I have people that disagree. I don't expect everyone to agree with what I'm saying. As long as you're providing value for other people reading the comments, that's cool. Where I draw the line is when you constantly say the same thing after I've given my rebuttals.
Mm-hmm.
Then they don't say anything. Then I post another video. Then they comment pretty much the same thing, just in a different way. And then I stop engaging. And then I'm like, you know, this is getting excessive, so I just block. Because I feel like they're doing it. They're trying to make me look bad in order to look good.
Right.
And thankfully, it's like very rare. But lately, it's increased quite a bit on LinkedIn. And I think it's because that platform is actually growing.
Yes.
Leaps and bounds. I mean, LinkedIn, we could do an hour-long podcast on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Matter of fact, if I was starting out as a researcher, I wouldn't even bother with YouTube. I would just LinkedIn.
Right.
And since you're creating it, you might as well put it on YouTube. But the main, you know, number one platform for you should be LinkedIn.
The organic promotion on LinkedIn is crazy, because I see posts from like 20 days ago. And that's just unheard of on any other platform.
Mm.
Like, you got to go looking for those kind of posts.
Yeah.
On like Instagram. Like, you're not going to see those on Instagram. But on LinkedIn, yeah, I see posts from like weeks before, and it's crazy. So the organic promotion on LinkedIn has got to be great.
Yeah, LinkedIn's awesome, man. I mean, I love it. So yeah, that was just something personally I wanted to ask you about. You'll get there, man. They're coming for you at some point.
We'll see. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, stay ready, man. Stay ready. After a while, it just gets annoying, and you're like, all right, just be quiet.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else we didn't cover? What talked about your career. About bad and good PIs, about coordinators doing everything, a little bit risk-based monitoring. Whoa, what's next for you? Like, what do you want to do long-term in research? You're young as hell, so.
Yeah, I think I really like CRA, so I don't think I'll go past like top, whatever the top CRA position is, CRA 3 or senior CRA.
Okay.
I love the freedom of it.
Yeah.
The freedom is like unparalleled. Like, it's basically kind of like being an entrepreneur in that sense, because mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never been like a full-on entrepreneur, but how people talk about it, at least, like this financial freedom thing. But you got a lot of freedom. Like, you don't go to like many meetings. You fly all over the country. You make good money. You get to eat at some of the best restaurants all over the country. Yeah, you stay in nice hotels.
You get to gain weight, although you haven't, but people won't know even when you do.
That's true. but it's a great lifestyle. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it may not be the best for people with like big families or who are wanting to start a family,
right.
But definitely while you're young and definitely while you are, mm-hmm. you know, hungry to learn, it is definitely one of the best positions you can have.
Let's stay on that topic. So, okay, while you're young, do you think that – I don't know the answer. Yeah, I'm just – I want to get your opinion. Do you think that being a CRA is a young person's game or a young person's career?
No, not necessarily. I know people that have done it for a long time, but I think it can definitely be difficult if you have like – if you are with a family.
Yeah.
Or if you were like miss your family a lot or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you can be gone a lot. Like, there have been times where I've been gone for like weeks. Like, there's a stretch coming up here where I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks consecutively. Like, I'll only be at my house for, like, 3 or 4 hours one day. Like, literally, I'm flying back, cleaning out my suitcase, putting new clothes in, and going right back to the airport a couple hours later.
Yeah.
So, which was dumb. I should have just went direct from that location to the next location. But I'm doing that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I get – and do you think there is such thing as ageism in this industry as far as CRAs are concerned?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I've worked with some CRAs that are up there in age, mm-hmm. like 55, 60.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've even known some CRAs that started later in life, like in their 40s. Yeah. It can be great once your kids are grown and out the house.
Yeah.
Great position for anybody. I mean – you get to travel. You get a lot of freedom, like I said. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've developed a lot of friendships with people over the years in different places. You get to see your friends that normally you'd have to go pay to go see, which is cool.
Yeah.
Get to take them out to dinner, mm-hmm. and that's awesome. So it's a great life, and I think a lot of people should definitely investigate and do what they can to achieve it. Not just that, but also I find that finding jobs after you're a CRA, and it's hard to get to that pay scale. It's hard to get to six figures in life, in general, and it's hard to even get past that. But once you are at that level, it can be easy. If you want to go to another job, it's going to be hard for them to make you go under that. It's going to be hard for them to want to offer you less money than what you're currently making.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it gets your salary up too, and even if you only want to do it for a year or two, it makes sense. If you want to go do project management or something after that, whatever. You can dabble. I think it's good to get your salary up, and then you can go do something else if you want. But
yeah,
for me, of CRA.
I think more people need to experiment. What do you think of my theory that specialization is for insects? And yes, you got to start out. I mean, you started out as a specialist, right? Like, you know, PM assistant, then you went TMF, then you did mm-hmm. all, you know, now you're specialized as a CRA. But if you look at your career, okay, look what you've already done, and at your age, okay,
right,
you're becoming a generalist. And my theory is that everyone in this industry should strive to be a generalist, even though no one's going to pay you extra to do it. Yes, you got to do more things or learn about things that you're not getting paid for.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to provide you the job security in a forever changing marketplace. I mean, with technology, right? Like but you have to start as a specialist. Like, usually people, like, no one's going to hire a generalist. Like, who wants somebody that knows a lot about or a little about a lot? You know, they want you to, you know, dig a hole. Like, you got to know how to use a shovel. Later on, you know, you've got to, I think, people should be generalists. And this metaphor applies for the sites too. If you start out with one specialty, like central nervous system, you should learn about general medicine. You should try to learn about oncology. Just whatever you can, be diverse. I think the same exact thing applies to employees. It's just harder to teach the employee that, because an entrepreneur already kind of sees that big picture. Mm-hmm. An employee, their first thing is going to be, why am I going to do something I'm not getting paid to do? I don't want to do that. I want to go home and watch March Madness.
Right. I would definitely agree with that for a couple of reasons. But one is when you kind of get into a CRO, they seem to like kind of pigeonhole you in a therapeutic area. So let's say like oncology, like you said. So if you get kind of in an oncology situation and then you start, you know, leveling up, you start from like maybe that CTA position, whatever the entry level position is, and then they put you in an in-house CRA, they're most likely going to put you in oncology studies for in-house CRA. Then let's say you work on that for a while and then you become a CRA. They're probably going to put you back on oncology studies because you have that experience. But one of the things you can do actually is like if you change companies, they may not look at that experience and say, you've got to be in oncology now. They may say, okay, we'll just put you in CNS because that's what we have available. So that really works for you. But also one of the things I've noticed too is people don't really hire people, or at least what I've seen, they're like, you've got to have 10 years of this experience. As long as you've got some of that experience, that's good enough for them. And you know, from my perspective, monitoring is monitoring. You've got to understand how to monitor and understand the craft of monitoring. And I think the indication is kind of secondary to that.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I mean, so that was going to be my follow-up question. Should they jump ship and, you know, to expand their therapeutic indication capabilities if they know that? Or maybe you approach your employer and say, hey, you know, can I be a contractor? Here's why I want to do CNS and all I'm doing here is oncology. Can mm-hmm. I continue that but also do CNS somewhere else? I mean, you know, you gotta know who you're talking to first, because it's not going to work for most people. But maybe you get somebody who's open-minded and say, yeah, okay. Or maybe they want to keep you and say, well, we can have you do some CNS stuff with us. You know, we want to keep you here.
Right. Yeah, there are definitely opportunities like that out there. And it also depends on how these companies are set up too. Some are set up in that business unit type of mold where you're in oncology and you'll pretty much stay there, or a CNS or Gen Med or whatever the units are, how they're split up. But others might be, you might work across therapeutic units. You might have an oncology study, you might have a CNS study, you might have a dermatology study or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just depends on how it's set up. You know, different CROs are set up differently. And different sponsors are too. So,
if I want you to speak at my conference, how is that going to work?
I don't know.
We got to put a paper bag on your head, like a old Cleveland Browns fan. How are we going to make that work?
I don't know.
We got to figure that out.
We have to think about that.
Yeah, because when you were talking, I was like, you know what? Like, I have Clinicon coming up in October, and we're looking for speakers, and I know you'd be perfect, but maybe that's later on down the road for you. We got to get you.
Maybe round two.
Yeah, round two, round three. You got to get your foundation and your feet wet, and it'll be interesting to follow your career. I'm curious to see how that goes. You're actually the first, like, employee to have a YouTube channel and a podcast. Like, it hasn't been done. What you're doing has not been done before.
Are you calling me revolutionary, Dan?
Yeah, man. Hats off. Hats off, man.
I appreciate it.
I don't think it's been done before, has it? I don't think so.
Not in this industry. I don't know. Oh, in other industries for sure.
Yeah, no, but in research.
No, not in research.
In research. Interesting. Yeah, you're the first, man.
Huh. Yeah, I guess so.
Hats off, man. Keep it up. It's going to be interesting to follow your career just for that alone. And maybe we'll write a feature on you in the Clinical Scoop around this time next year to kind of track your career, see how things go. This is interesting. This is interesting.
That'd be what awesome. You're doing.
Yeah, we're trying to get that set up too. All right, man. Anything else? Anything else we're leaving off the table?
No. If people have any like questions about anything I've said, or you know, want to reach out or just say hello, or you know, they can either comment on my channel. It's youtube.com/eliteclinicalresearch, or you can email me eliteclinicalresearch@gmail.com. I do have a phone number too, a number that you can text, but I will let you search for that on the YouTube channel.
you're gonna get, well, you probably already are getting bombarded with questions.
Yeah,
right?
I get a good number of texts. But if you ask a question, I prefer email, just because I can like expand more on that.
Are you answering everyone's email?
Yeah, everyone gets a response. Yeah. And a lot of them, kind of like what you did, I will do a video on their questions too, because they do have a lot of interesting questions. So most of them will get a dedicated video too.
Yeah, it's been hard to keep up. Like, I've been screenshotting the good ones, and then like my camera rolls, like I just end up doing whatever I feel like. But early on, that helped me because I was running out of stuff to talk about. So like the viewers were very helpful at that time, and I try to get back to most people's, but there's always somebody's I miss.
Right.
You know, it's tough, but yeah, keep up the good work, man. Keep doing what you're doing. You're an inspiration to other CRAs out there. See, not every CRA that's an entrepreneur needs to go open a site.
Right? That's true.
I mean, I love that's you true. Guys. Call me if you want to, right? 949-415-6256. We'll help you get a site set up. Our biggest growing demo for site owners is CRAs.
Really?
By far. But not all of them have to do that. Some of them can do what you're doing. Others are doing recruitment agencies. There's others doing all kinds of stuff. Consulting, that's the obvious stuff. Like, you can do a lot of things here. Become a generalist. I guess that's the theme of this interview is expand your capabilities. Learn. Do more. Follow ECRG. Look what he's doing. That's it.
I like it. Thanks, Dan, for having me.
Thank
I
you,
really
guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And links to ECRG channel underneath. And catch you all later. Bye-bye. So, hey, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.